We'll call this evening's meeting together. This is meeting number 21 of the Municipal Courts Task Force. We are here in the legislative chambers of the Tompkins County Legislature. With me this evening, we have the Honorable Betty Poole, the Honorable Glenn Galbraith, Supervisor and Attorney Jason Leifer, and I'm Ray Schlatter, the Chair. Excused for good reason are Gwen Wilkinson, the District Attorney, Scott Miller, Ithaca City Court Judge, Mark Solomon, and I don't know, I haven't heard from Liz, and I'm trying to remember whether she's expected or not.
She's right there.
And Liz Thomas is here, so here we go. Thank you. No, that's good. We just sat down, we just started, so relax. That's good. So, tonight, we're hoping to finish our discussion of the remaining issues that are in the, we'll call them the Glenn Galbraith missive, and then start focusing on the writing that has occurred thus far and beyond. But before we get there, let's take a look. We have three different sets of minutes. I have previously had proffered corrections to the March 13th and April 13th set, and I've just tonight proffered some just typos, small corrections to the April 27th minutes. And anybody else on the committee is free to do so as well, just by getting them to Joe and Marcia. But that being said, may we have a motion to approve those three sets of minutes as corrected? Glenn moves. Any further comment? Any second, by the way?
Second.
Jason seconds. Any further discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So they're passed. We now come to the portion of the meeting entitled Public Comment, and this is an opportunity for anybody, any member of the public, to address the group. Comments will be recorded and made a part of the record, and we welcome them at all times. Is there anybody here who would like to address the group?
Ray.
Yes. Michael.
Mike Link, Chair of the County Legislature, attorney from Dryden. I just want to commend all of you on 21 meetings. That's pretty wonderful for a group task force like this. Shows your dedication, shows your interest, shows your commitment to our community. But I did sit through your last meeting and listen to some of the comments, and as a member of the public and a member of the county legislature and a longtime member of the community and the governments of the community, I wanted to say I do hope you will continue to look at the district court model. I realize that we looked at what they were doing in Nassau County going back to the 30s, but that we would not necessarily have to have a district court in the same mold. Our district courts could be more similar to, in my view, could be more similar to our city court, for example, or other city courts. They would not have to be as expensive as we heard was in Nassau, where they have 30-some judges. We would not need to have that kind of effort. They would likely take some of the costs away from the towns and villages because they would be paid for by the state. Now, that does not necessarily mean that having a district court is less expensive than having town and village courts, but it would be centralized, and it would also allow for, in my view, a more even distribution of justice, so that people, no matter where they were in the county, would feel they were getting the same treatment and the under justice as they were, no matter whether they're city, county, village, wherever. We need to have everyone understand that the fairness of our system and not question how they are treated when they're treated fairly and the same as everybody else. I think that's important. I think we don't want to get, you shouldn't get overly tied up in assuming that no matter what we do, it has to be less expensive. I don't think that was really the intent of the charge. It was part of the charge to see if there were things that could be done that would make it less expensive. But improvements usually cost something. And the question is, if we need something that's going to be better, are taxpayers willing to adjust their thinking so that we have a system that is doing and delivering justice even better than the one we have now? So I'll leave it at that and say thank you for letting me speak.
All right. Michael, thank you very much. And we value, number one, your constant attendance at these meetings. It shows an interest, and it also ratifies the legislature's interest in the work of this committee. So that's gratifying to see that as well. So thank you. All right, Chair's report. What I circulated only a couple of hours ago, and you all have it by email, is a beginning draft of the report. What I tried to do is to take the good work of Glenn Galbraith and Liz and Gwen and knit it together. I like that phrase, knit it together. I also put in my own language. And I've set up a structure which I kind of would like to see this report go in. There may be some disagreement, obviously, with some of the language, but what I intend to do next, basically I've given you section one and section two. There will be a section three and a section four. Section three would be the recommendations that I believe could be implemented now, meaning relatively quickly, and they would fall into three categories: that which can be done without, in other words, it can be done by fiat, in essence. The second category would be that which requires the cooperation of the town and village courts. And then the third category would be that which requires legislative action. And but legislative action that presumably could be done reasonably, reasonably quickly. It would not require necessarily constitutionally based legislative action. So that's the type, or the section three of the report. Section four of the report would address the future, and I know that that will generate a lot of discussion. It might generate some dissent, but in any event, that's where I think some of the models that some of us would like to see emerge could be proposed, and some of the status quo models could be argued. And in other words, it's going to take a little bit more interesting language, but that would be the future. So that's what I have drafted thus far. It obviously, there are a lot of holes in it, and there's a lot of incompleteness, and Marshall Lynch has already advised that there's some of my data requires slight corrections, so there you go. But that's where we are at this point. So that's my chair's report. Joe?
Yes, if members didn't get a copy of that draft, I haven't downloaded it either. I can forward it to the members of the task force, so I'm not sure who got it, but again, I haven't been to my desk, so I will do that later.
Just so I can, I actually just took one of your emails to all of us, and I responded to
okay.
it.
Okay, so it may be on your, check, yeah. If you don't get it, I'll certainly get it to you. I just have three things on my list. The first is my usual plea to use your microphones. It really helps with the audio. The second is to pick up on something that Mike Lane said earlier about the appreciation for your willingness to work through 21 meetings. I mean, I just looked at some of the things that we've compiled as a part of what I'm doing on the writing. It's the appendix. And to see the amount of work that's been done and the hours that you've put into this task it's really remarkable, and it's greatly appreciated. And I say that on behalf not only of the county, but this is a TCOG exercise. So I say that on behalf of TCOG as well. It really is greatly appreciated what you're doing. Last thing of my list of three, in your packet, I put the first kind of order of magnitude estimate of the cost of adding a judge in county court. I had a brief conversation with Judge Rowley to ask him about how the courts are staffed in county court, and he gave me the lineup of titles. If you see it in your stack, you can see that a county court judge currently is now making $183,000. Staff to that judge would include a law clerk, a court clerk, and a support person called the administrative assistant. These are, except for the judge's salary, these are order of magnitude estimates. I checked with Maureen Reynolds. I think the court clerk may earn a bit more than the 50 we put on here, so we'll fine-tune this later on. But salaries in the neighborhood of $380,000, fringe benefits, the normal rates in the public sector is 50%, so a total personnel cost of around $575. We put a supplies and et cetera kind of line in there at 10% of the personnel budget to bring the whole kind of office operation to $632,000. Then they have to sit somewhere. So we assume that a rental rate of about $20 a square foot, 1,000 square feet for those individuals, bringing the total costs of the operation to $651,652,000. So in terms of setting up a new judge to do things like, at one time you talked about diverting all misdemeanors to county court, if that required a judge, this would be the all-in cost if there was a full staff contingent that was provided. I did put on here how much the state takes in fees and fines out of our local town and village courts. You may recall that from an earlier table. It's almost $1 million that we send to them from court revenues. So if you look at their bottom line, they still make a profit, or would make a profit if you want to call it profit, even if they took over the cost of those additional salaries. And again, the way it works in the system is the state pays for personnel-related things and operating expenses. The host government, which in this case would be the county, picks up the physical space, the quarters for them. So almost all of this cost would be a state cost. Nothing is implied here that the state would agree without a little persuasion to pick up that cost. That's a different issue, but it would be a state cost.
I just might follow up on that. When you look at some of our adjacent counties, Tompkins County only has two county judges. We have a population in excess of 100,000 people. Chemung County has three county judges with a population that is presently, I believe, in the $90,000 people range, maybe 95. The point is they have fewer people than we do. The reason Chemung has so many judges is because when they were doling out judgeships back in the era of Warren Anderson, so we're talking back in the 60s, in that time period, that's the last time they really looked at this, Chemung County had more people. They had over 100,000 people, and we had at that time less than 90,000 people. I think we were down into the 80s somewhere. And so what is happening is that our population continues to grow, but we've never been allocated the extra judge to which, frankly, by the old metric, we would be entitled. And the populations in some of these other adjacent counties have shrunk, and nevertheless, they've retained their complement of judges. So I'm not urging that we steal one of Chemung County's judges, but I am suggesting that we have, a decent argument that if we wish to push for an additional county court judge position, we would have, I think, some compelling factual basis to support that. All right. But thank you, Joe. That's helpful, and it is what we had asked at the last meeting. All right, so let's turn now to the remaining items to be discussed, and I think everybody has Glenn's very helpful, and Glenn, thank you again for doing this, because it really does help focus the discussion. We have Glenn's memorandum of April 29, 2016, and I think, as I was going through it earlier, the items to be discussed, and not necessarily in this order, but I think we are looking at 7 and 8. We're looking at 12, 13, 14, 15, and 18, 19, 20, and 21. Now, most of these, I know that's a lot, but I don't think they're going to require as much discussion as they might imply, because we've already discussed a lot of these things before. But if one were to group these, one would be looking at what I would consider to be the pre-court alternatives. In other words, the way you would divert cases, either through a youth court or a mental health court or some other mechanism. So you have that issue. You have the operational issues, which are the items expanding court hours, the question of access through electronic records, spreading out the court schedules, that type of thing, written decisions. And then you have the issues that pertain to, I would call third-party policies, the issues of trying to encourage the district attorney to post policies and use and stick to that, have courts buy into certain policies with respect to resolution of cases so that we can streamline and make it more efficient and, frankly, therefore more fair and even for those on the outside. So those are the kinds of things that I'd kind of like to discuss this evening. And I know we left off the last conversation where we were discussing the centralized arraignment parts and the question of getting, you know, how can we manage that. We were given some copies of legislation that is pending, and I know that we kind of left that up in the air, but I'd kind of like to get to some of these other issues, because we never really, I don't sense that we're going to be able to come to closure on that, and so I'd rather tackle it in the context of language that we put in our final report, because I think that's something that we need to confront in that context. So, that being the case, let's go to the operational stuff first, because this is all, it's all very interesting, but it really is the stuff that addresses some of the meats, the meat of efficiency and trying to help assign counsel, coordinate better, et cetera. So if you turn to Glenn's items, if you look at 11, page 11, that would be items 18, 19, 20. Let's just talk about those first. The question of court hours, the question of spreading out court schedules, the question of better access to the courts through electronic records and other means. And let's open up the discussion there and see. And again, I caution us, obviously, in certain measure, we cannot force the hand of some of the courts to do this on the one hand, but on the other hand, I think every town and village has the ability to say, this is when our facility is available for court. The county has the ability to say, we will make resources available to get all of your records electronic and therefore more readily available. So these are the kinds of things I'm thinking, that there are indirect ways that we can accomplish some of these, what I think are pretty important changes in the way we deliver this system of justice. Would anybody like to discuss this? Liz?
So this is a recommendation only, right?
I think it has to be, unless we can figure out a way. Part of our charge is, if we're making a recommendation, if we have a way of implementing it, let's recommend that as well. So, yeah.
I guess I would like to, I know that it's personnel reasons and money reasons, but I mean, for Ulysses, we have a full-time clerk. So it's, I think that answers the accessibility issue. We have day and evening options for court. I'll just say we've managed to do that, and it seems like that is that the accessibility level that we're looking for?
Well, I would suggest that I think we ought to have a system where no matter where you are in the world, you ought to be able to go online and get access to court records that are otherwise in the public domain, and ought to be able to schedule things, and ought to be able to communicate, and frankly ought to be able to pay fines and et cetera. I think it's ridiculous that, you know, we require people to show up personally. I think that's unnecessary and time-consuming, as well as a huge inconvenience for a lot of people.
So we're looking at 18 as the court hours. So are we talking about a person in that case? And with number 19, it's the electronic records?
I mean, court hours certainly is, if there's going to be a time when court is open and accessible in person, yes. I mean, we've got to obviously, I think every town and village court already has regular court hours. The bigger issue is the overlap between one court and another, and therefore the conflict in those times.
So maybe that needs to be spelled, I wonder if that needs to be spelled out a little bit more in this particular, in number 18 is the conflict with other municipalities, or
it's already in?
That would go into item 20 probably, but we can talk about it.
Okay.
I mean, Glenn chose to put numbers on these, but that doesn't mean that we're stuck with those. You know,
you're talking about when the clerk's office would be open for the court hours?
Well, there's different things. The clerk's office being open is one issue. The second, and the second issue is when the courts hold session.
Yeah, because the Monday night is the night that Julia had said is packed.
Right.
Some of this is, it could be due to the town board schedules too.
All three of these are kind of interrelated, but maybe we could look at them one at a time just to see what we can sort out.
You know, one thing, they are interrelated. At the minimum, I think every court should at least have a website that says when court is being held, from what hours, generally to what hours, and when the clerk might be available other times during the week. Now, my clerk comes in sort of at odd times, depending on her own schedule. And then every court should at least have some means of electronically having communication with the outside. You know, an email address, phone number, obviously, a fax machine, so somebody can file something, even though the clerk may not, at least in some courts, we're only part-timers, and that includes the clerk as well, but at least somebody should be able to file something, or mail in their payment on a fine, or mail in a motion or a request for something, or email it in. And I'm sort of just guessing, but I'm assuming all the town and village courts have a website, but I don't know that that's true. And ways of communicating with that court when the clerk and the judge are not physically there.
I've checked a little bit of that. The towns and villages as an entity have websites, and then as a subcategory frequently say town court, this is the village justice, open, you know, Monday 5 to 7 p.m., that type of thing, and town clerk name and the telephone number. Sometimes they have an email, sometimes they do not. So that's about the extent of it. But I think what you're saying makes a huge sense. Betty, were you going to say something?
I agree with Glenn. I know our town has it. I'm not sure if it includes our email or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure that all of them do, but I know that it's very, very bare bones.
We ought to at least come up with a recommendation of sort of minimal standards and ways the courts can be communicated with by the public. It'd be ideal to have clerks who are there full time, but some of our courts just aren't big enough to support that. And we do really need to sort out the lack of real coordination as far as the hours, so we can avoid this problem of the Monday night issue and maybe some other times during the week. My sense is that the town and village justices are willing to do that, but I don't think it's actually happened.
Right.
I guess my question is, since many of the courts they don't have enough staff time, but if we're talking about recommendations here, I mean, we may not have the personnel, we may need to hire personnel. It's the minimum level of staff time required. So if we could come up with some sort of reasonable estimate of hours that someone should be available, I think that should be in the recommendation. And if they, you know, if it's unaffordable, it will be clear that they can't do that. But I mean, that's something that we can use for the New York State Legislature, you know, to say, look, we can't perform correctly because we don't have enough money to actually pay to have a functional court, you know, staffed. I don't think that that's a bad thing to bring out, is that municipalities are really stressed for money, and this is one of the places that we may just have understaffed. So our job might be to point that out.
Well, one thought is, and this is where I'm kind of was alluding to the carrot and the stick kind of model. One thought is that it is in, and I hate to dump it all on the county, but it is in the county's long-term interests to streamline the scheduling of courts, because that will help reduce assigned counsel costs. It will help, presumably, it is in the county's interest for the town and village courts to adopt more of a ROR presumption with respect to offenses, because that will reduce jail costs. And so part of the trade-off could very well be to encourage the county not to make a full-time staff person available full-time, but rather for the county to lend its resources, its technology resources, on an ad hoc basis to each of the town and village courts to set up an electronic system that would then accommodate what we were just talking about. And I think Glenn's point about minimal standards is a good one. The minimal standards, I've written down five of them thus far. There should be a website that is more comprehensive and informative. It should be setting up some sort of communication system that would go directly to the clerk and would become a viable communication system. In other words, emails would go back and forth. Papers could be attached for filing, that type of thing. It should be, I think, maybe not immediately, but in the long term, I think it should be where documents can be immediately filed, and what is on file can be immediately accessible. In other words, anything that's in the public record of a court ought to be publicly accessible to anybody, whether they are litigants, attorneys, or the general public, ought to be publicly accessible. And their system ought to be set up like that, and people ought to be able to file papers in a way that allows that to happen without the need to put a stamp on it and send it through the mail, etc. Fourthly, I think that the system ought to include the ability to accept electronic payment of fines. And it's simple enough. You can simply attach a surcharge for the convenience of using that method. I know the city of Ithaca does that for lots of different things. And you just pay a couple of bucks extra and you pay your fine and that covers the processing cost. And then, as I said, the fifth would be the minimal standard really is that that the county would train somebody in the town court level, the clerk presumably, so that he or she then would be able to update this system on a regular basis, whatever needs to be done to keep it updated and operational. So, I mean, those are some of the minimal standards I think ought to be part of the package. And the carrot, of course, is that the county will pay for this, because at the end of the day, it behooves the county to do this because it'll save it money.
I think those are all good recommendations. I'll be interested to see if the county is willing to pay for it. But, I mean, they're all good recommendations, so we should take them forth however it gets paid for.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other minimum standards that one would like to add to that?
We're not talking about a minimum standard of actually having someone physically at the phone or at an office.
Now, this is just addressing this particular issue, which is what I'll call the electronic access to the court. We need to talk about some of the other stuff as well, but I'm just trying to come up with minimal standards in operational, in court operations that, again, we cannot impose, but we can impose in the same way that the federal government imposes educational standards on local governments by saying you don't get your money unless you do this.
There currently is the availability of paying fines online. Not all courts have it, but it is out there and it is available.
And I think that's good. I mean, there's a cost, and I'd like to see this more countywide. That's, I think, part of all of this, is to try to make this fairly uniform and cooperative. Now, we could also expand that to say that in exchange for all of this, and including that we are going to remove from your local burden the DWI cases, that we want you to coordinate your schedules so that we don't have every court meeting on Monday night. In other words, that can become part of that, tit-for-tat. Because I think it is important. So I'm kind of moving out of just beyond the electronic now, Liz, and I'm moving into the next area, which would be spreading out the court schedules, making the physical court accessible. I think a lot of the courts do try to do that. I mean, most courts meet in the evening as opposed to during the day, in order to accommodate the needs of most people. And I'm not suggesting that we have Saturday court, but I'm suggesting that they not all happen Monday. So
I agree, Ray. The issue being is a lot of the courts share the facilities with all of the other boards. Town board, planning board, comprehensive planning, etc. So that in it also throws a monkey wrench into, okay, when can we have court and who gets the priority?
Right.
And that's very difficult. That's very difficult. I have no problem in changing, and I think that's an issue that can be easily resolved within the Magistrates Association. I think it...
How does that happen, though? I mean, because candidly, we had talked about let's get a grid of all of the courts, all the meetings, every planning board, every session, and that was one of the tasks that our law students was going to engage, but that never happened. I don't know if it's still possible or not, Joe.
We've got the comprehensive schedule of the courts. We have not overlaid on that the competing uses of court space.
And how complicated would that be for us to...
Well, my guess is most of us now have calendars online. So, for example, in Ulysses, are all your meetings posted online? There's a calendar. Probably wouldn't be that hard.
Well, and the thing is that we have TCOG. We can bring the scheduling issue up there. And then, talk about it through the fall at our organizational meetings, which are always the first week of January, if we could hammer it out. I mean, we could change the planning board meeting date and even the town board meeting date. It's just that you know, it's coordinating with a lot of people, but we can do that, so or at least we can try, and certainly some municipalities will be able to adjust, and not all of them need to, because you know, we could leave at least what, one or two on Monday night. I don't know how, what's the, maybe that's part of the recommendation, is not more than so many on a particular night or at a particular time. And I don't know if we can spread it out, like say that one court is from 5 to 7 and the other's from 7 to 9 or something like that. I don't know if that would help enough on the same night.
Well, there's a couple of ways to look at that. One would be to just say geographically, if you're going to have two courts on the same night, let them be Dryden and Groton, as opposed to Dryden and Ulysses, mm-hmm. and that type of thing.
Tough drive.
Pardon? Yeah.
I did that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, if we knew what the recommendations were, it seems like the towns could try and make that work. I mean, there are also, people's work schedules that have to fit into it too. So it might not happen the first year, but we could certainly improve upon it if we work together, I think.
Okay, so are we in agreement that we put, our recommendation would be to come up with some minimal standards of access that we've just discussed, as well as include to TCOG that they work with the member courts, with the town and village courts, to come up with schedules that eliminate the overlap, and to the extent that can't happen, at least to create geographic proximity as much as possible. Would that be?
Yeah, that would be good.
Something like that? Everybody else in agreement on that?
Yes.
Okay. Betty? And Liz? Yes. Okay, good. The question of expanding court hours, again, is I don't think the expansion of hours is that important if you have the electronic access. In other words, the warm body isn't necessary if the database is available. But I'm, obviously...
I think the trickier part, Ray, is having the database available to the public.
Right.
It's one thing to have the public be able to communicate to the court, even though there's not a clerk or a judge there reading it in real time, but maybe a couple days later. But the trickier part is allowing the public to get into case data and pull that information out. One, I think there are always these concerns about what's sealed and what's not sealed, and the fear is we put something up there by mistake. Yeah. But I think also it might be some kind of burden to get it in there and then be constantly protecting the stuff that's not allowed to get out. I just haven't thought that side through clearly enough. But there's no reason why the court shouldn't be accepting information from the outside and having things posted that anybody should be able to know about, like the hours, et cetera.
Well, I think we have two models. One actually has been in place now for several years, which is the federal model. And in fact, you can go online and you can look at every single paper that's filed in a federal case. They're all docketed. You can get a docket sheet. You might have 150 different documents. There are lots of different rules about deletion of material that is subject to redaction and what have you. There are processes in place for removal of materials that are mistakenly posted, and then they get removed and redacted, whatever. I mean, it's all there. It can be done.
Yes.
And frankly, at the end of the day, I think that's the level of access that I'm pushing for.
Yeah. Because I don't have... I'm not against it. My concern is it's one thing for my clerk to go through and respond to a particular request and say, okay, this person in the public wants to look at such and such a file. So she just goes and pulls that one file and she sorts through and figures out what can be released, what cannot be, as opposed to going through every file and making it electronically ready to be viewed by the public.
That's time consuming.
That would probably be a major undertaking.
It would make up even more time as opposed to the DWI.
Oh, yeah. It'd be a huge amount of time.
Well, I would think going forward, though, because most of these charges come in electronically, so that can just simply be filed electronically and therefore available electronically. And then if the file then becomes sealed, then you just simply, there's got to be some electronic seal mechanism that says this file is no longer available. I know that there is a, you know, there are rules that pertain to the names of complainants and what have you, there'd have to be some sensitivity to that. But I think these are manageable rules, and I think that's where I'm asking for the assistance. I'm not looking to go back through the archives and making all the past stuff electronically available. I mean, it'd be great if we could do it, but that probably is unrealistic. But going forward, and that way you could simply change protocols to make it happen, that's all. Yeah. File comes in, you electronically file it. You know, paperwork comes in, you electronically file it, and it becomes available. So, but I think at least that would be, I would like to recommend that be the direction we're moving towards. I recognize that it is a difficult task to implement, and it is not going to happen tomorrow, but it could happen with some folks on the outside helping, which presumably the county would help provide or would pay for. What about but let's go back to the expanded court hours. Are we asking that the court hours be expanded or changed? I mean, I'm not talking about the overlap, but are we asking for more time? Clerks be there more often? Are we asking for that or not?
I would say no.
I'm sort of in the same camp, even though I wrote that, number 18. The clerk is there when she needs to work. And when she's done her work, I don't want her to just sit around twiddling her thumbs waiting for somebody to walk in. As a practical matter, she puts in roughly the same number of hours every week, and she probably does it the same times, but I don't want to sort of lock her into that either. Having a clerk just sitting there being available to the public, at least in a court the size of mine, is not a good use of time or money. But having her available certain hours every week so somebody can come in and get access, I think that's important.
Jason?
I mean, I do think it's important that there's at least consistent hours. I mean, and maybe even a minimum. But again, you're kind of constrained by the town's ability to pay for the staffing anyhow. I mean, the problems I've run into with courts are more so outside of Tompkins County, where, I can't reach a clerk, period, where they don't return calls or even faxes or anything. That hasn't happened here, but as long as there's consistency, so the public knows when a clerk is available, just to make, if someone wants to come in and make a payment, because they may not be able to do an online payment. You have people come in and pay cash or money order or something, and they need a receipt. Maybe that could be taken care of if town clerks were allowed to take those payments, if you couldn't have a court clerk there or something. There's probably multiple ways to go after this, but
they're always going to get a receipt, even if they mail it in, because we do send we're obligated to send receipts back to them.
I just know in Dryden sometimes people show up with cash and they're not going to mail cash in.
I mean, something like that could be addressed with something as simple as a mail slot, a secure mail slot.
We have that there.
Yeah, yeah. We have that. I think most courts do.
And the email communication would be good, too. I know our court in Dryden, they refuse to use it.
Yeah.
Well, we use it.
Refuse to use email?
Oh, yeah. They don't have a good reason for it, in my opinion, but they refuse to. They're you know. See if I could change that, but.
Well, that's in the recommendations then. I just wonder if, I mean, Jason, maybe you don't have trouble accessing the courts because you kind of know when they're available in the county. But I mean, if somebody's driving through, gets a ticket, which is what's been the case a couple times in Ulysses, this woman came in the other day and she was looking. I mean, luckily we have a full-time clerk, but she's like, this, I feel like I'm in Mayberry here. So, I mean, there are some people from bigger cities that would assume that, you know, they drive all the way up from wherever and assume that the court office is going to be open. And we do have a slot, but and there is a telephone. But I don't suppose that the arresting officers could be enticed to say, and, you know, your clerk's hours will be such and such, you know, that would be too much to ask. But I can see the results of it being confusing for people from out of town to not have that open.
One of the problems we found in Dryden, though, that there's a website that lists court hours. It's private, and I think it was, I don't know if it was a local attorney who had something to do with it, but many of the times in there are completely wrong, and but it comes up first on the web searches.
Oh, dear.
Me and our deputy clerk happened to just contact whoever is maintaining the website at the same time one day. I don't know if it's ever been changed, because I haven't checked back, but sometimes it's not the municipality's fault for the times being posted incorrectly. We have these websites of, you know, basically their attorneys fishing for business, and they try to be helpful, and they have just bad information that they don't maintain.
Well, how about if we address it in this fashion? How about if we note that access is important, and in this modern era, to the extent that we are able to increase access electronically, it will lessen the necessity of increasing access through some physical, that type of thing. And I think that, because I think ultimately I don't have a problem with that. You know, I'd be perfectly happy if the judges stayed home never had to set foot, and that all of this could be done electronically. But for certain things, you know, obviously not jury trials. But all right. Is there anything I don't see? Okay, I think we've addressed those issues. Let's switch or push the conversation to this whole question of, and I really was hoping that Gwen would be here, because I believe that there are certain things that can be done extrajudicially, and I want to include in that the notions of youth court, the policy or adoption of policies by the district attorney primarily, and perhaps even mental health court. But I want to get to the issue of what can we do extrajudicially what can we recommend that would serve to reduce the pressure on the town and village courts in a way that would make sense, both from a justice standpoint as well as from a cost standpoint, if possible. So do any of you folks have views? You want to open it up, Glenn?
I know when I first started as a justice, there was a program called Diversion. It was used fairly frequently. They were oddball cases often, sometimes interfamily disputes. And I think it was driven by the prosecutor's office and or the police. And the case might come to me, but then almost immediately the prosecutor would suggest that maybe we ought to send this to diversion. And it as I recall, it either put the case on hold and then defendant and or his family and the defense attorney and the prosecutor work something out and there'd be conditions of going to counseling or whatever. And basically that I just have the case sitting there for X amount of time, and then at the end, if it was successful, it'd be an ACD, basically, an adjournment contemplation of dismissal. But that was used fairly frequently. Then the program got axed for some reason, and I'm not quite sure why. I don't know if it was money or there was a difference of philosophy in the DA's office or whatever. But it was a great way to get some of these cases out and sort of not create records for people who really didn't need records in the courts.
I remember that program very well, and it was a useful program. And I'm trying to remember which district attorney finally put the axe to it, because I think it was
George.
I think so too, but I don't want to misspeak.
Yeah, and I think there was some money issue involved. I don't think it was because he had a philosophical problem.
Oh, okay.
With it.
I think there was
money. Yeah. I mean, I think what they did was they used some of the diversion required some supervision by probation. I mean,
I think you're right.
It was like a pre-trial diversion program, and the probation with, and they had the, remember they had the workforce.
Yes.
Community service.
And I think folks. Actually one of the people who supervised it passed away or became unavailable, and that was just sort of enough to just stop it in its tracks.
Pardon?
Was it Bob Johnson?
Was Bob the one? It's possible that Bob may have been there. But in any event, yes, that actually, that's a more formal version. What I'm kind of wondering is whether we could encourage or recommend the implementation of a youth court, and I don't mean to pick on youth, but I think that's a good place to start. A youth court initiative that would be handled through the probation department, or excuse me, through the youth bureau, not the probation. I want to keep it out of the system, but it would require the local police to be making that judgment call, so that an individual who might be a suitable candidate for this would not even get into the system. Because I think that's the piece that is so devastating for so many of our young people, is once they get into the system, they somehow or another, that always manages to bollocks up their ability to get jobs or get into schools or get training in whatever area they wish to get training in. So I was very impressed with Bill Shaw's, the presentation, and I mean, it was useful, but the materials that have accompanied it, I was glad to hear that this system is available in some of the other counties. Ontario County was one example. And I think that it doesn't have to be something that ties up the court, but I'm not sure how we can get the local police to buy into it, but it strikes me that most of the time they'd be happy to do it because they would not have to process the person as an arrest.
Then that would not affect the town of Village courts whatsoever.
Right. It would just simply affect them in the sense that it would reduce the flow into the court, which is a good thing. You understand?
Yes, I do. I'm just wondering if it's applicable to this particular committee.
Well,
if that's not something that...
I think it's a recommendation to just try to slow the flow of cases into the courts.
Okay. All right.
Which would then dovetail with some of the other issues in terms of trying to reduce the pressure on the local towns and villages, which at some point might then inspire some of the municipalities to consolidate their town courts within the existing law. because their caseload is smaller. And so, I mean, we started hearing some smatterings of that. I mean, even with, you know, we have Judge Chernish and yourself, and I mean, that might actually be a good fit, you know, down the road where Newfield and Enfield consolidate. I'm not saying you should, but I'm just saying that that may be something that the voters in those areas may wish to do. And the impetus for that would be you have a lower caseload, in part. You're looking at me with...
How would that...
Well, if all the DWIs are removed from your courts, your respective courts, mm-hmm. if all the youth cases end up getting, not all of them, but, you know, the vast majority of them get diverted in this fashion, it may be that both the town of Enfield and the town of Newfield may say, you know what, we can get by with one court. We'll sit, you know, we'll sit sometimes in Newfield, and we'll sit sometimes in Enfield, and, you know, we'll go back and forth. And over time, when Judge Betty Poole retires or Judge Chernish retires, maybe one town or the other will say one judge is enough. That's a local call. I can't, you know, obviously that's nothing that can be mandated.
Right. I think that's ultimately available now.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I'm trying to think in terms of how can we incrementally perhaps get to that point, mm-hmm. If we can't do something more whole cloth in the manner that Mike Lane is urging upon us, you see. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know. Liz, you have thoughts about that?
No, I mean, it sounds like it's a worthy recommendation. I mean, I was also impressed with Bill Shaw's report, and it's interesting to hear about programs from the past. It's always money that is the problem, it does seem, unfortunately.
Yeah. So can we agree that one of our recommendations will be to try to resurrect the youth court system in this county and perhaps place it with the Youth Bureau? Is that acceptable to everybody?
Certainly acceptable to me. My concern for it is that I don't think it's going to affect that many people, that many youth, and it's going to take a lot of planning, and it's going to be a lot of work putting it together, and there will be some expense involved as well. All that being said, I'm in favor of it. It's just I'm not sure it's, quote, worth all the expense and trouble relative to some of the other things that might be less expensive and less trouble. But all that, like I said, I'm in favor of it. I just wonder if it's practical.
Any other views on that, or may we include it then? All right. How about this question? And again, it's a little bit unfair because Gwen isn't here, but and obviously she's going to have to pass on this, but the notion of encouraging the district attorney to be more transparent about the policies that it will be recommending, obviously these are not binding on the different courts, but it would be recommending with respect to traffic tickets and misdemeanors and frankly, DWIs, though if we end up with a DWI court, that'll be less important.
Are you on a particular number on this sheet?
Oh, well, it's number 21, kind of.
Number 21, kind of, okay.
Where we talk about publicize the district attorney's plea bargaining procedures and standards.
Did they have something online already? My assistant district attorney does do a lot of the negotiation via email and letters, although he won't do phone calls because it would eat up all his time, I understand. But they may have something like this already, at least to some degree. I don't participate in that until they, right. It actually comes to my court. But
I don't know. Betty, are you dialing it in? Let's check it out. All right. I know that it is not as extensive as what is available in both Broome County and Seneca County. I'm familiar with both of those.
I agree. I think if they did more of that, it would speed things through. Even if the court didn't always go along with the recommendations, it would at least ease the communication process, and people's expectations would be a little clearer, I think, as well.
They don't have anything on the website.
There's nothing? All right.
I've seen in Albany, one of the district attorney's offices there does have...
Where's that? I'm sorry.
I think Albany County.
Maybe. Oh, okay.
Or one of the others nearby. They have... I know they have a sheet or like a publication of their DWI, plea bargain, scheme so that people know up front what they can expect. And I think they have some for certain traffic tickets as well.
Well, I think one of the things that became pretty clear to us that I think DWIs and speeding tickets seem to be the most ubiquitous of all offenses in the town and local courts.
Here, I mean, just in my own practice, I found the ways petty larcenies are treated.
And petty larcenies, yeah, that's...
I mean, you go to city court, much different result than that. And
I don't know if it had to do with the individual ADA's
right.
opinion on it, or... I mean, it
doesn't seem like there's a policy in that office of how to handle it.
Right. Okay, but can we include a recommendation that something like this go forward? Again, we'll put in some language. I just want to make sure that there's a go-ahead before we write it up. Everybody seems to be nodding their head yes, so.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Let's go to.
I should just mention one thing about that before we leave
yes,
it.
Yes, sure.
I don't think anybody's been suggesting this, but courts are not allowed to get involved in that process or even share with a defendant that there is this policy out there and they should read the policy or take the policy from the DA and hand it over to the defendant. The ethical opinions have been pretty clear on how we're yeah. supposed to stay completely out of that process until...
Any negotiating
there is a plea bargain, and right. then it's brought to us. But I didn't think anybody was intending to
right.
make that part of the recommendation, but I just did want to make sure we didn't involve the court directly in it.
And that point is well made and noted, because, and I think in prior discussions we've made clear that any such policy or any such posting of such a policy would have to include that kind of disclaimer language and instructive language. Let's go to the intermunicipal cooperation issue. This is item 12. Actually, before we do that, let's talk about the mental health court, because I think that's somewhat of an orphan that's kind of hanging out there. I know that mental health court, this is item 14, mental health court means different things to different people. I think we had a great presentation by Carol Booth and the other individual, and what became clear is that a whole lot depends on who the presiding judge is in terms of the effectiveness of the court and the scope of its reach. And candidly, we only have the information from Auburn, and we have the information from, I think, Monroe County, where those are the two places that we received information on. I'm of a different mind about this, so I'll go first. In some sense, every court is a mental health court. I mean, I don't mean to be trite, but I think at the core of any criminal disposition is what is called the mens rea of the individual, and the mens rea, the mindset, and for some people, they may act in a way because they are, let's say, Patty Larson, they may be kleptomaniacs, or maybe a very valid psychological, if not a defense, at least an explanation for the conduct. And therefore, every judge, town, lay, professional, whatever, every judge is, I think, keyed into those kinds of concerns and has the wherewithal to say, you know what, as part of this resolution, we need to make sure there's a psychological assessment, or we need to make sure there's some treatment or what have you. So I know that that's not necessarily what was being promulgated. I think what the idea is to try to remove the stigma of criminal prosecution from cases that are truly driven by mentally aberrant behavior of some sort or another. And that makes sense. But the question is, you know, at the county court level, we have a whole system in place where people are assessed and determinations are made, and that all works. At the town and village court level, I'm not sure who has the capacity to make that kind of a judgment call on something that is as complicated as what motivated the individual, for instance, to steal, or what motivated the individual to haul off and punch somebody, or what motivated the individual to possess drugs, you know, at the misdemeanor level. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. So I'm not sure this is going to work, other than perhaps to wrap it into the you know, the DWI courts, I'm having a brain freeze.
Drug court.
The drug court, yeah, the drug court, you know. So, I don't know, I haven't really said much except to ramble on, but I'm just curious what you folks are thinking, the rest of us is thinking.
It seems to me that the mental health court, youth court, drug court, those in particular, these sort of treatment courts, they're based initially on the prosecution's willingness to see these cases be handled in a unique way, in a treatment setting, as opposed to the standard criminal process. And if you've got a DA who's interested in seeing that happen, then I think these things are feasible. And you can have judges who have either specialized training and interest in those, in dealing with those kinds of issues, and that it's workable. If you don't have a DA who's willing to do it, or you don't have the funding and the expertise with the judiciary in those particular courts, it's probably not going to work well. And you just take your chances out in the criminal system and hope the judges have enough knowledge that they can take mental health issues, youth issues, drug issues into account in processing the cases. But I'm in favor of them, but in a way, I sort of don't have any control over them. I think they get diverted, and it's diverted by law enforcement, or the AD, or the district attorney, and thus those of us who would otherwise get those cases, we don't get them.
We don't see them.
Right, and that's fine. I think that makes sense, because I think those of us who do sit in courts and regular criminal courts realize that the law is a very, very blunt instrument, and there's only so much we can do. But a specialized court has the capability of sort of dealing with the problems in ways that are unique. It's not just a matter of putting somebody in jail, setting a fine, they can do some community service, whatever.
But Glenn, are you not, and when you say we don't see the case, you actually do see it though, because a charge is typically filed. And then the DA or somebody says, you know, this case is better handled by thus and such.
Yeah, that may be true, or conceivably the charge would not be filed with us, but would go straight to that other court. I don't have a problem with it either way. Mm-hmm. And if I've got a DA who's willing to have it go to drug court or what have you, I'm happy to see it go, because I don't think DA's going to send them down there.
Well, here's a question. Here's another way of looking at it. Is there a way? There's no way to get into drug court except by a referral of a court, right?
No, it's negotiated.
Yeah, it's between the defendant and the prosecution, pretty much.
Right, but it's a case that's pending already. In other words, if the police arrested Ray Schlatter, saw that he was high on drugs, and said, you know, Schlatter, I'm going to refer you to drug court. I'm not going to issue you a ticket. I just want you to go to drug court. And then I'd say, okay, sure. That can't happen, right?
I think you're probably right. In fact, there's got to be a plea, right?
Are you talking about prior to charges being filed?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah,
what we were talking about earlier, a diversion system,
but even
separate from the criminal courts, which we don't have in place. So we don't have a pre-complaint phase of anything here.
I mean,
there is something that exists in high schools, somewhat, where there's a number of them have the probation officer assigned, and if kids get into a fight or something, they get put into sort of a PINS diversion without a filing happening in family court. But if we were to do that with adults, I mean, it would require cooperation of the 13 police agencies in the DA's office. I mean, they'd have to want to do this, and then we'd have to have the system set up for them to take care of it.
Well, let's play with that for a minute. Why not? Why not have, we already have drug court. Why not recommend?
That's after a plea.
That's it.
No, but why not recommend that the scope of drug court or the clientele be expanded to include pre-plea, pre-charge. In other words, I'm okay with having local police agencies be able to offer the option to individuals, something along the lines of, you know, I just caught you with, you know, an ounce of marijuana in your pocket, and I can charge you, but Jim, frankly, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go show up at drug court, and if you do that, I'm not going to charge you. And all of a sudden, that person is, you know, and then all that has to happen is the cop notifies the drug court and says, here's a guy who's coming over. The guy doesn't show up, let me know. And then they let him know, and, you know, within 60 days, and if the person doesn't show up, he issues the ticket. I mean, something along those lines would be, in my view, a nice way to keep people out of the system, keep people out of the courts, and yet get the assistance that they might need to deal with the problem. And they could do that with mental health, too. They could do it with youth court.
I don't know that I'd have a problem with that either, but I believe one of the reasons why the DA's office, I'm making this up, I'm not really talking to anybody at the DA's office about this, but I know they require charges to be filed, and the defendant actually pleads guilty.
Right.
And I think there may be a carrot at the end that, you know, maybe those charges would be reduced, assuming they're successful in it. And I'm assuming that they require that guilty plea because they want to have their hooks deeply embedded in that person so he or she can't run or doesn't have the an incentive to just blow off drug court or what have you. So it may require persuading the prosecution side to give up that level of perceived leverage.
Well, in
but
fact,
that's just a guess.
No. Actually, the jail component is the primary reason for that. You couldn't have a drug court judge putting somebody in jail as part of the carrot.
That's true. Yeah,
if there weren't criminal charges pending.
Yeah,
and so in other words, in essence, they revoke bail for a weekend, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden this person is in jail. That's part of the contract. But I'm thinking, I'm just wondering why we couldn't recommend that a mechanism like what I just described could be used as the, we'll just call it the pretrial, the pre-charge diversion. That and then that could fit for youth court, that could fit for drug court, or excuse me, for mental health court, and to some extent that could fit for, you know, the drug court issues, the opium issues, and, you know, the heroin problems that we have.
I think with the youth court, when Bob came in, it was talked about in terms of being outside of the traditional
mm-hmm. Right.
Because even the sanctions at the end of it were not severe. There was no criminal record generated or even
But could you?
I think what we're, because it really would start with the enforcement agencies. And if you had the system set up, they wouldn't even need to consult with the DA if they didn't want to.
Right.
Because if there's no charge filed in the DA's office, really, it's not really necessary to involve them. I know what the drug court, if the carrot is the reduction of the charge or the dismissal. Mm-hmm. But there are certain cases, this is in felony drug court, where you know, someone has a prior record and they're not eligible for certain, you know, benefits anyhow. I mean, what they're getting out of it is not going to directly. And so I don't know if we had a specific part of the eligible we're supposed to talk about here, but we had a class of people in felony drug court, usually the lower level, like the E felony, where at some point it made no sense for them to remain in the program because remaining in the drug court program subjected them to a longer period of supervision than they would if they just went to prison and were paroled. And it's a, you know, you see it fairly regularly. And so,
do we have any other views on this? We're getting towards the end. I just want to know, I think what I'm thinking is something like this, because I believe we're running into a problem with the jail issue as part. In other words, I can't see us being able to send people pre-charge into the existing drug court program, even if we allowed that to happen in some fashion. The court would not be able to deprive that individual of liberty, you know, on a contract, not on that basis, not without a charge pending. So set that aside for the moment. But I could envision down the road something akin to our drug court, something, in other words, a court that would be a pre-charge venue, much as the Youth Bureau can accommodate the youth court. Perhaps there's some other venue that could be used to accommodate a pre-charge diversion. And I would want it to be outside of the criminal justice system completely. So It might be, for instance, the mental health department. They might be amenable to taking mental health candidates.
That's the way I think it. I mean, from my own experience, though, the mental health cases are where I think this really fits, not so much the drug cases.
So how about that? How about if we, Joe, could you have a conversation with mental health director and the health department director, whoever, and find out. I'm curious to get some sense from them as to if there was a mechanism whereby people would be, by the police department simply referred to them. I mean, in some sense, that happens all the time. They take them up for observation and
941.
The 941s, yeah. But I'd be curious to see if we could do something that would be short of a 941. In other words, if the police could simply have somebody at mental health where they would call up and say, hey, I've got Ray Schlatter here. He just is in crisis, and we really don't want to arrest him, but we want to make sure he gets some help. And can you see him tomorrow?
Okay. I will check on that. And this doesn't fit the timing of the task force. But we are going to begin taking a look at something called LEADS, which is Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. The analogy that's often used here is, in the old days when a kid got in trouble and the cop would grab him by the back of the neck and march him home to the parents, and you assume that there would be a remedial action at that point. It's much more sophisticated than that, but it does stop prior to arrest. It's an officer who has the discretion to lead this person to services that may be of help. They just started it in Albany last week. It's been applied in some other places, and the Public Safety Committee here is beginning to look at it to see if it might be applicable here. It sounds like it fits a lot with what you're suggesting.
That's perfect. And I think, can we agree that we do include that in our recommendations?
Sure.
Let's get some information so we can at least make sure we're happy with that, but that makes sense. All right, so I think we're at the point now where the only other thing that we haven't really, I mean, there are probably a handful of other things, but we haven't talked about the intermunicipal consolidation in any significant way. And I'm not sure if we actually ever finished our discussion about reducing all the town and village courts to one justice. I don't know that we've discussed that, so that's one that's out there.
That's one that would work probably in some places better than
but not in others. No, I understand. Here's what I want to do. Most of the other stuff we've looked at, we've reviewed. What I would like to do is for us to have, the next time we meet, to actually have a fairly complete report in front of us and have it for at least a few days so that people could actually start reacting to language and reacting to recommendations and saying, nope, I don't remember that we agreed to that. I think it ought to be here, it ought to be there, etc. So we can really start getting a final product. I don't see that happening in 2 weeks. I wish it could. The only way it's going to happen in my life is if I have a couple of trials coming up, and if one of them settles, I'll have some time. If it doesn't, I simply won't have the time. So I think what might be useful would be for us to not go forward on the 25th, but instead go forward on the one after that, which I think June 8th, I think it was.
We'll find out.
If you look at our last minutes, I think, yeah, June 8th. We asked everybody to reserve the 8th and the 22nd of June. What I would hope is that by June 8th, the product that you have in front of you that now has two sections written will have four sections written, where I'll try to incorporate everything that we have come up with. And frankly, if anybody wants to, I know that Scott's working on the DWI part language. And I got a text from him today saying that he wasn't able to get it finished, but he promises to get it as quickly as possible. A lot of the other stuff is pretty straightforward. You know, this is what we're recommending. I have, my sense of this is to not put a huge amount of rationale in for each of the recommendations, because I don't want to get into the trap of quibbling over the rationale. I think we've taken a lot of stuff, and when you look at what I've written, I try to outline all of the data and speakers, and not the individuals, but the, you know, whom we heard from and whom we invited and the kind of stuff we've accumulated. And I tried to take the lead from Liz on that and use a lot of that information. So I'm hoping that that you'll have something to read, say, by the end of this month, and that we could then, by June 8th, be able to discuss that along with these remaining issues. And is that acceptable, or do people have other thoughts about this?
I've got a problem with June 8th, though.
Oh.
I'll be in another state.
The law school is going to let you go on reunion weekend?
It has nothing to do with the law school.
Okay. All right.
And I have the same problem on June 1st. I'll be in another state. June 15th, I'm going to be in New York City.
How about the 22nd? Are you around then?
I think I'm in town, but I'm having a medical procedure the next day, so I might not be available.
Are you here on the 25th of May? Of May.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks hence?
Yeah, I'm available on the 25th of May.
How about the rest of you?
Yeah, the June 8th, not going to be good for me.
Not good.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it on the 25th, and I will figure out how to get something out before then.
Can I ask, is it just the day of the week that's a problem, or is it the whole block of those weeks? I mean, if we moved it to a different day of the week than Wednesday.
Right now I have trials scheduled June 8th, 8th, 9th, and 14th, and then 25th I could do, though I might need to leave here early just because I'm speaking at the longest meeting.
You're talking about May 25th.
Yeah, I could be here for most of the meeting. I just, you know,
But Ray, it sounds like it's pushing it too much to do the 25th. Is there a way that, I agree, that we could find another date? A little bit later is what you're saying.
I appreciate that, but I'm also, if I have to get it done, I have to get it done, that's all. So I'll figure it out. But as a practical matter, May 25th, if I am in trial, it's over in Schuyler County, and it's going to be very difficult. I frankly won't be here unless I ask the judge to let me out early. I won't be here until probably 5 o'clock anyway. So.
Well, why don't we aim for the 25th? But, if you can't get it done, and we can fully appreciate that you might not be able to, then we're just going to have to reschedule anyway.
Yeah.
And then maybe Joe could send out a list of dates times, and then we could just, say which ones were available for and which ones were not.
Sure.
And hopefully get a critical mass of the committee together.
Yeah, so just arbitrarily, how does the Tuesday, I think the 7th of June, how does that look for people? That's what?
I
think that's a legislative meeting here, yeah.
Is that the first Tuesday?
And that's the one Savanti is going to be presenting.
I'm out for that whole week.
That whole week, okay. So then the following week, what days are you available the following week?
Monday, Tuesday I have court, but that starts at 6.
Okay.
I'm available Friday, but Wednesday and Thursday I'm in New York City.
The 14th, Flag Day. You could conceivably do Flag Day if we got you out of here soon enough.
Right. And I could start earlier in the day.
Yeah, we could maybe start at 4. How about you, Jason, on the 14th?
The afternoon's fine. The trial's in the morning on the 14th, but...
Betty?
Probably going to say...
14th? Liz?
I'm actually not available until the 22nd of June, so...
Oh.
But you could proceed ahead. That would be okay.
All right. So why don't we do this? Let's leave it for the 25th of May, but the backup day will be the 14th of June. Okay?
At 4, you want to do it a little early
and
at 4 o'clock?
On the 14th, we do it at 4 o'clock, but on the 25th, right. Leave it at 4:30, and but please understand that it may not happen. Okay? All right.
And then are we still holding the 22nd? Just holding the
Just
date.
Hold the 22nd,
okay.
Even though it may not. But, okay. All right, fair enough. So, final item, have we added value? I think that's important, so where are we at here? Liz?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's really a wonderful group. It's been always very interesting to hear everybody's perspective, and I appreciate the civility of this group. It's wonderful.
Okay. Betty?
Yes, we have.
Glenn?
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
Jason, and I too. I echo Liz's point. This has been a real pleasure working with everyone here and with everyone who's not here. And I think we're going to actually have something that we can all be happy with as reflecting the consensus of some fairly well-informed folks. So thank you. All right, we're adjourned.